Good afternoon, and thank you very much for joining us here at Sun Sounds for the Tuesday, July 21st edition of the East Valley News. I'm J.W. Nicholas, your reader for the next half hour, and we'll be looking at some news from the past week in Chandler, Gilbert, and Sun Lakes. And we'll start this afternoon in Chandler at the Santan Sun News with an article by Samantha Rea, staff writer. Audit flunks state school grading system. Arizona's school letter grades do not accurately reflect how schools are performing, according to a recent performance audit of the Arizona Department of Education from the Arizona Auditor General's office. The audit also found that state officials have been out of compliance with the law requiring individual grades for performance indicators that comprise a school's overall grade. Both the Arizona Department of Education, ADE, and the State Board of Education agreed with the findings. Developed by the ADE and approved by the State Board of Education, the A through F letter grade accountability system has already been under revision for more than a year and a half. Many of the recommendations made in the Auditor General's report align with the ongoing revision process, said Board Executive Director Sean Ross at last month's board meeting. I'm also going to pat the board and the department on the back a little bit, because this process began well before this audit, Ross said. The department, the board, the TACs, Technical Advisory Committees, all saw the need for revision and have worked towards this through this process. And it's nice to have that process validated in this audit. The audit identified two key findings, the first of which centered on whether the grading system accurately communicates school performance to the public. School letter grade system developed by the department and approved by the state board obscures key performance differences between schools, limiting its usefulness in providing public information about schools' achievement, the report states. According to the audit, over 77% of public schools received A or B letter grades in the 2024-25 school year, although most students on average did not demonstrate proficiency on state assessments. Auditors found that among the 117 high schools that earned an A in 2025, math proficiency rates ranged from 9.6% to 97.4%, while English Language Arts, ELA, proficiency rates ranged from 8.6% to 98.3%. Because the grading model considers factors other than proficiency, as required by statute, high letter grades may be relatively easy to achieve, even with low proficiency scores, the audit found. Auditors found that most schools earned at least 80% of available points on every indicator except proficiency. Those indicators include growth, graduation rate and graduation rate improvement, college and career readiness, English language learners, and acceleration and readiness. Together, those measures make up about 70% of the total points used to calculate school letter grades. Growth alone accounts for 50% of the K-8 grading model and 20% of the high school model, but auditors found it may not mean what parents expect. Rather than measuring whether students are making progress toward grade-level proficiency, the current growth measure awards points based on how students perform on state assessments relative to their peers who scored similarly the prior year. As a result, statewide schools earned an average of 80% or more of the available growth points each year between 2022 and 2025, except in 2023, when a change in the statewide high school assessment required a different growth measure. Meanwhile, statewide proficiency rates were identical, 40% in ELA and 33% in math in both 2022 and 2025. Additionally, the threshold to earn a B is just 65 out of 100 points for high schools, and bonus points, which no other state in the audit's comparison group uses, resulted in 149 schools earning an A they didn't deserve. The audit also flagged a data integrity concern. One indicator, worth up to 20 points, the College and Career Readiness Indicator, is based on data schools self-report to ADE. High schools are awarded points based on factors such as AP testing, dual enrollment, FAFSA completion, and CTE course completion. Although ADE has a process to validate the data, it reported that it did not follow the process before the data were used to calculate schools' letter grades in 2024 and 2025, citing staffing issues and turnover. Board officials disputed aspects of the first audit finding, arguing the grading system is intended to measure performance across multiple indicators rather than proficiency alone. Officials also contend the word average in the board's published grade definitions does not refer to the statistical average, making it mathematically possible for a large portion of schools to be rated above average simultaneously. Auditors responded that whatever the internal logic of the system, that explanation is not publicly available to parents who rely on the common understanding of what an A or B means. They also noted that the grades issued to some schools appear to contradict the board's own published definitions. The board has said it plans to revise those definitions. The second finding of the audit centered on ADE and the board's failure to comply with or ensure others' compliance with state laws. Although statutorily required since 2018, department and state board have not issued letter grades for the indicators that make up overall school letter grades and did not ensure the committee complied with open meeting laws between 2018 and June 2023, limiting public transparency, the report added. Although the state has required individual indicator grades since 2018, schools still receive only a single overall A through F grade each year. The lack of indicator-specific grades limits parents' ability to compare schools based on the measures that matter most to them, the report said. ADE and the Technical Advisory Committee for the Accountability System began work on the indicator grades in 2019, but delayed implementation because of disruptions caused by the pandemic and other priorities, according to the report. When work resumed, officials concluded the existing grading model would need significant revisions before indicator-specific grades could be issued. The current system was not designed to grade each measure independently. On the open meeting law front, auditors found that the committee responsible for helping develop the grading methodology failed to comply with Arizona's open meeting law between mid-2018 and June 2023, a period during which oversight of the committee had shifted from the state board to ADE, according to the report and Ross. Ross said the transfer of oversight reflected a belief at the time that the committee had moved from a system creation phase into a maintenance phase, making ADE the more natural home for those meetings. He said there was also confusion about whether the meetings were subject to open meeting law. There was also some confusion in the language of the statute, and the report acknowledges that as well, Ross told the board. So those meetings weren't open, but in coming to 2023, Superintendent Horn came into office. When our staff stepped in 23, we met with the board, we met with the department. We really thought it would be more appropriate to have those meetings at the board because indicator scoring was going to be a big topic, and that's more of a creation piece. And so we moved those meetings back, and every meeting overseen by the board has always met open meeting law, he added. During that period of ADE oversight, committee discussions that led to key recommendations, including changes to letter grade cut points and the addition of bonus points, were not conducted in public meetings or documented through publicly available agendas and minutes, further limiting transparency about the system, the audit said. Auditors found no open meeting law concerns after the board resumed oversight of the committee in 2023. The audit makes 13 recommendations to ADE, the state board, and the legislature. Among them, complete the long-delayed indicator letter grades, revise letter grade definitions to more accurately reflect school performance, ensure committee compliance with the open meeting law, and validate schools' self-reported data. The audit also recommends lawmakers consider whether state law should be revised to better align the accountability system with the legislature's intended goals. The board and ADE have said they plan to implement all of the audit's recommendations, with ADE saying indicator-specific letter grades could be in place as early as November 2027, pending board approval. The Auditor General's office will follow up with both agencies in 6 months to assess progress. I'm looking forward to the work of the board as we continue to move forward on the A through F accountability system so that it is more transparent and families have a deeper understanding of what an A means and what an F means, Board President Catherine Haley said. This story is made possible through grant funding from the Arizona Local News Foundation's Arizona Community Collaborative Fund. And our next article comes from the Sun Lake Splash. This is by Rose, Resources Outreach to Safeguard the Elderly. Embarrassment is always the number one answer. Whenever we speak to a group, we sometimes ask those gathered the main reason why people do not report being the victim of a financial crime. In nearly 100 presentations over the past 3 years, the number one reason has always been the same: embarrassment. In a country where it seems nobody agrees about anything, it blows my mind that every group always comes up with the word embarrassment. The reason why the answer has been so consistent is because it is simple and true. No one wants to admit being the victim of a scam because they don't want to be perceived as gullible, having poor judgment, or unable to handle their financial affairs. About 2 years ago, we had the privilege of speaking at a fraud prevention presentation hosted by a police department. We asked the question about people not reporting being victimized, and we got the same expected answer. This time around, an unexpected thing happened. Multiple attendees openly shared their stories of being victimized in front of the crowd, which numbered over 50 people. Plus, others shared their stories with panelists after the event. One victim even went as far as going on a local TV station to tell her story. We can only assume we created a safe environment where they could openly tell others what happened to them without feeling any embarrassment or shame. This does not happen by accident. Collaboration is the key. The presentation 2 years ago included speakers from law enforcement, the financial industry, and the nonprofit world, and the presentation was covered by two local newspapers. We believe this collaboration brought out the best from all these entities, and the winner was the public, who was well served with valuable advice, understanding, and compassion. Each party could have held its own event, but there is no way the outcome would have been so successful. We were all on the same team that night, giving a united and consistent message. Being targeted by a scam can happen to all of us. Even smart people get scammed, and scammers are ruthless financial predators who are extremely good at what they do. Our collaborative efforts show that the good guys can do the same thing. We cannot eradicate scammers by arresting and prosecuting them, because they will be replaced by others like a game of whack-a-mole. The only solution is prevention. We have to dry up the pool of potential victims and put scammers out of business. Rose seeks to create change by educating and providing awareness of financial scams that typically target the older adult population, with a focus on those age 60 and over. For more information and resources, visit www.roseadvocacy.org, email us at info@roseadvocacy.org, or call us at 602-445-7673. You are listening to the East Valley News on Sun Sounds of Arizona. I'm your reader, J.W. Nicholas, and we're looking at news of the past week from Chandler, Gilbert, and Sun Lakes. As a quick reminder, if you missed any part of this program or others you may enjoy on Sun Sounds, you can access all of them anytime on demand on our website at www.sunsounds.org. Find them under broadcast info and audio. And now move along to our next story coming from the Gilbert Sun News, this by Aparna Sekar, GSN contributor. Gilbert develops stricter data center controls. Developers hoping to build data centers in Gilbert may soon need to navigate tighter restrictions. Planner Sal DeSanto confirmed that Gilbert's new regulations are a bit more strict than the surrounding communities. They may be a bit more restrictive, but they're now not completely outlandish to what's existing in the Valley, DeSanto said. The new rules submitted last week for discussion by the Planning Committee include controls for sound mitigation, lighting, parking, water use, fire and safety precautions, electrical infrastructure, building height, design, landscaping, and setbacks. The Commission is expected to hold a formal hearing on the measures later this year before submitting a recommendation to Town Council. DeSanto said the proposed measures are necessary for several reasons. From the staff's perspective, the first is recognizing modern infrastructure needs, he said. With data centers becoming essential components of today's digital economy, supporting everything from business operations and everyday online services, we need to make sure that the town is also staying up to date with those trends to establish clear development standards, he added. Another reason is protecting residents from the problems such facilities bring to neighborhoods, ranging from noise and consumption of water and electricity to their visual impact on neighborhoods. DeSanto also said that the proposed amendments to the town code will set a clear development standard for data centers in Gilbert. Currently, data centers are only mentioned twice in the town's land development code, DeSanto said. This is essentially trying to establish new sections in our code to address data centers, which are currently do not have in our code, he said. Data centers in the town code today can be zoned under a business park designation or a light industrial designation, and the proposed rules would eliminate data centers from business park zoning. Staff believes that it would be best to have these only in industrial zoning districts, meaning light industrial and general industrial, and completely removing it from the business park zoning designation, DeSanto said. The proposed measures would not allow developers to make modifications to development standards for data centers through a planned area development, PAD, process. That is a zoning tool that enables municipalities to allow customized land use for complex or large-scale developments. This is something that would be unique to our current code, DeSanto said. Data center developers would also be required to secure a special use permit and would not be allowed to tap into the town's potable water supply. The proposed measures would require these facilities to be set back at least 400 feet from adjacent property lines and 650 feet from residential areas. We had an in-person look at how much of an impact these structures can create to adjacent communities, DeSanto said. The new code would also require data centers to be located close to an existing or planned electrical station for reliable power service, DeSanto said. They can only use energy that is available on the grid, and if there isn't any power available, they need to establish their own source, he said. One of the adjacent municipalities to Gilbert currently has 16 to 19 data centers, and each and every single one of them does have a substation on site as they weren't able to meet their power demand. The new regulations set the maximum building height at 55 feet while requiring all mechanical and utility equipment on site to be fully screened by a building or by a screen wall. Developers will also have to provide architectural detailing on all publicly visible facades, along with windows or glass panels on 40% of the front facade and 15% of all other facades. According to DeSanto, the new rules define a ratio of one parking space per 6,000 square feet, similar to what some other East Valley municipalities follow. Parking for data centers can be a bit tricky due to the square footage of the development and the limited amount of employees actually on site, DeSanto said. The new code also puts stringent landscaping requirements in place. The facilities will need 35 feet of landscape setback on all street frontages and 100 feet near the side and rear property lines. The latter requirement increases to 200 feet near residential neighborhoods. Developers will also have to submit a sound study as a part of their application. The town would like sound mitigation studies provided with any application, and also tossing around the idea of annual sound studies for any data center we may have in town, he said. For lighting, these facilities can only use downward-facing, full cutoff features with light trespass caps on residential property lines. Besides being forbidden from using town potable water, data centers would not be allowed to use open-loop evaporative cooling systems. This is from the fact that these can be very wasteful to the town's water, DeSanto said. Typically, with these cooling towers, we would like to see them cycle through three or more times, but unfortunately, most of the time, they're cycled through once and can become a big waste of water, he added. Data centers would also be subjected to an annual fire code inspection and have clear and descriptive door signage for proper emergency response. That was a big issue from the Gilbert Fire side, as it can be very difficult to maneuver through these sites, DeSanto said. Developers will also need to submit battery decommissioning and transport plans for staff reviews and have a smoke control panel in a facility's fire command center. Several commissioners questioned some of the stricter controls. Commissioner Brian Anderson noted that data centers are a hot topic across the country and suggested that staff include language regarding the use of reclaimed water for such facilities. Commissioner Jan Simon inquired whether staff is able to pinpoint some things other East Valley committees could have done differently when it came to data centers. DeSanto explained that most neighboring communities struggled with data centers' visual impact due to their sheer scale and height. Other issues, as per DeSanto, were noise and odor-related. I think it's a combination of a few things from those local communities that they've learned from, and we're just trying to get on top of those so we're not learning these lessons later, DeSanto said. Commissioner Leslie Davis urged town staff to look more closely at design and landscaping requirements for the power substations that data centers may have on site. Commissioner Jenna Lyon warned staff about the possible trade-offs due to tighter utility regulations. We're prohibiting the evaporative cooling as well as potable water, kind of only leaves two options for the data centers, which would be air cooling, which is pretty expensive, or they would have a closed-loop system, she said. That kind of data center is running new chips that are powering AI and everything else, and they run really, really hot. So either way, I think we're trading water savings for increased power usage, she added. And a final article also from the Gilbert Sun News, this by Gary Grotto, GSN contributor. Lively GOP primary contest in Arizona House of Representatives Legislative District 13. Republican voters have three candidates to choose from in the July 21st primary election for the State House in Legislative District 13, as incumbent lawmakers will be leaving office or trying to switch chambers. The slate of Republican contenders for the district's two House seats, Chandler Mayor Kevin Hartke, restaurateur Janet Wenninger, and precinct committee woman Deborah Schinke, contains familiar names in the district, which encompass parts of South Chandler, Sun Lakes, and Gilbert. The district is among the most competitive in the state, and the outcome of the contested GOP primary will affect both parties' chance of winning the district in November. Hartke, who is running for the legislature after serving 8 years as Chandler mayor and 8 years as a councilman, set his sights on the Capitol after a lawsuit made him rethink his political goals. Hartke has filed a statement of interest to run again for the Chandler City Council last year, but his 2022 mayoral opponent filed suit to challenge his eligibility to serve as mayor and raise questions about term limit provisions in the city's charter. A judge dismissed the suit, finding it was an untimely election challenge. Harkey told Axios Phoenix in August that he decided against running for the city council because of the term limits issue, and he pivoted to running for legislature. Harkey has become known for taking a pragmatic, pro-growth approach. Harkey says on his website he's a strong believer in fiscal conservatism, limited government, and smart economic growth with an eye toward the future. Weninger is looking to step into the seat that her husband, Republican Representative Jeff Weninger, has occupied for 5 terms. He's running for Chandler mayor. Janet Weninger co-owns Dilly's Deli and Floridino's Pizza and Pasta in Chandler with her husband, and she has been involved with several nonprofits that serve children in need and sex trafficking victims. She founded Crusaders of Love in 2019, a charity that visits homeless camps around Arizona, California, Texas, and border towns of Mexico to provide essential food and clothing. Weninger says on her campaign website that family and faith are the cornerstone of her life and touts her child advocacy. While Shinke is a newcomer to running for public office, she's been involved in politics at the grassroots. She's a regional director for the Arizona Federation of Republican Women and a former president of Chandler Republican Women, besides being a Republican precinct committee woman. She is also a member of the Chandler Citizens Police Review Board. The only Republican seeking the LD-13 Senate nomination is Representative Julie Willoughby, who hopes to succeed Senator J.D. Mesnard, a candidate for Justice of the Peace in Sun Lakes. Whichever 2 Republican House candidate voters choose will likely face tight competition in November. Republicans have a roughly 9 percentage point voter edge over Democrats, but more than a third of the district's voters aren't registered with either party. Willoughby's general election opponent will be Christy O'Brien, the vice chair of the Arizona Democratic Party and a lawyer who specializes in divorce mediation. O'Brien ran successfully for the Senate in 2014. O'Brien is one of 5 candidates in the Arizona Democratic Legislative Campaign Committee's larger races to flip the legislature. Thank you for joining me today for the East Valley News for Chandler, Gilbert, and Sun Lakes. A quick reminder, you can always find us on any of your connected devices, streaming via our Sun Sounds of Arizona mobile app, available for Apple and Android phones and tablets. Once again, I'm your volunteer reader, J.W. Nicholas. Stay tuned for the Arizona Republic, coming up next on Sun Sounds of Arizona.